Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
UK's first ever dynamic pop country crossover male harmony band, Another State, consists of Sean Ryder-Wolf, Paul McDowell, James Gibson, and Dave Staton. Known for their unique sound that bridges the gap between pop and country, the band have quickly gained a dedicated following. James Gibson graduated from the Royal Academy of Music, performed for Queen Elizabeth II at the Royal Albert Hall, and has performed in many productions over his career all over the world, spanning over two decades. Sean Ryder-Wolf was a professional model and actor for over 10 years. Highlights include campaigns for Lee Cooper Jeans and Ted Baker. He has performed for King Charles III at Kensington Palace, appeared at the Royal Albert Hall and proms in the park, and has also supported the Jacksons at the London Palladium. Sean has also appeared on many primetime television shows, and he was also previously signed to Simon Cowell's label Syco in 2015 with Jack Pack, who came fourth on Britain's Got Talent. Sean founded Another State, believing that by pooling the band's collective wealth of experience, they could create something very special together. Up next on Celeb Savant from Another State, we've got Sean Ryder-Wolf and James Gibson.
Where are you guys in the world and how are you doing? James, you first.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure to be here. So I'm joining you from sunny Scotland. That is a moniker which is assigned to the country, which is completely not appropriate. But yeah, I'm doing good. So we actually have had some decent weather. Yeah, winter is coming, let's see.
And Sean, where are you?
Hi, Barrett. It's great to be here. I'm based in Warwickshire near Coventry. Kind of sides. Yeah, it's not maybe a bit gloomy today, but hopefully it'll brighten up soon.
Okay, so let's focus on your journey. So James first, let's go ahead to you. So what age did you think, cool, you want to be in the creative, the entertainment, the music world, and how did that journey progress? And then how did you meet the guys from Another State and what were the processes from there?
Right, yeah, lots to think about. God, what age did it start? Probably, I can remember being at this school concert when I was in secondary school. I probably was about maybe like 12, 13, so like just starting secondary school. And I watched some of the older kids performing. And what it was a trio of guys with guitars. And they were doing Lion Eyes by the Eagles. And I was sitting there, you know, listening to the harmonies and thinking, I want to do that. That looks really cool. So that kind of started me then going, okay, I'm going to go hang out in like the choir. I'm going to go spend my extra time doing that. Of course, it was a great place to meet girls because the ratio of guys to girls was like 90-10. So I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. So that kind of started it all from like the age of what, you know, 13, 12, 13, something like that. And that led me down a path of, like I think many artists do, I kind of started to study musical theatre. So I left secondary school. I originally went to law school and thought, God, this is boring. But I quite liked the whole being up in front of people element of it. And I thought, well, let's just eliminate all the boring reading and get to the being up in front of people part. Yeah. But, you know, so that led to performing. I did some undergraduate training here in Scotland. Then I got my first job at the Edinburgh Festival. And while I was working there, I had an agent approach me and they wanted to sign me and work with me. I worked with them based out of Edinburgh for about a year, but I wanted to learn more. So I thought, well, okay, there's two ways to do it. I can learn on the job or I can go and study more. So that took me off to London and I did my postgraduate studies at the Royal Academy of Music. So I did the musical theatre, the 1 year postgrad course there. And then very quickly sort of realised, once I was out of that, I thought, God, musical theatre is so limiting in some ways, especially in the UK. It is quite a small pool. So then I started to just go back to, well, what I love to do. I love to sing, you know, I love to sing pop songs. I love to sing contemporary music. So that led me to working in the States, to a brief foray at Disney World for a while, you know, and then I was just based in Germany doing like review shows. And, you know, each time you do the music of a different artist, I would always try to find a way to not imitate them, but to certainly kind of capture their style. And that I just found so much more freeing than having to be in that kind of, you know, that musical theatre sound and in some ways limited by that. So that led me all around the world. Then I moved back to the UK. I was based in Kyiv in Ukraine. My wife's Ukrainian, so okay. We had met working in Germany. Situation there, you know, I was quite happy there, but I came back to the UK and I thought, oh God, you know, I've been gone from this market for quite some time. I just started to get like working, gigging again, starting to do some small bits and pieces. And that led to a chance encounter with Sean, who was putting together this group of seasoned performers, which was kind of like appealing, you know, people who've been through it a little bit, you know, have got a story to tell. And yeah, that just led to meeting the other guys, Sean, Dave, Paul, and that blossomed into what is now Another State.
You referenced that singing in musical theatre is a bit limiting. What do you mean by that?
I think what I mean by that, because within the scope of character, yes, there are so many things you can do, but there's a style that people are kind of taught, including myself. I was taught that style at college, something called Estill Method, which is really good for like preserving your voice and protecting it. But what it does is you kind of get this generic sound, this kind of slightly twangy, slightly Americanized musical theater tone. And, you know, I would see it sometimes. I'd go to work on a job with other musical theater people. You know, we'd be doing a rock show. You know, you would hear people singing Tina Turner with, you know, this kind of musical twang to it. And I thought, God, this just doesn't work. You know, Ethel Merman was not designed to sing this song.
Yeah.
So it was one of those kind of elements. So I guess that's kind of what I mean, because like I say, I like to, without trying to imitate, sort of be a chameleon to styles. And the styles that always certainly had the influence on me growing up were, you know, that kind of Americana, that Nashville, the Eagles in particular were huge for me. So hearing that, I was like, okay, how can I utilize that? How can I, you know, sing within those realms?
Sean, so before we head to your journey, tell us why the name Another State, where does that come from?
Another State, the idea derives from, I guess, thinking outside the box. And it basically is a shortened term for another state of mind, which I found that just in my experiences as a person, I think when I've ever excelled in anything, I've had to step back and trust myself and do something different. And this project very much so sort of encompasses that whole ethos, if you like, you know, doing something a bit different, trusting. I trusted my gut when we all kind of had the idea to go more of a country route, which is probably something that's it's very unique in England. Yeah. In fact, we're the only UK band doing it and stuff. And it just felt right for us. And it just has a nice ring to it as well.
Okay, so now your journey and your story. What age did you feel cool you want to be into this creative world? And how did that journey progress?
For me, it took a bit of time because when I was at school, basically it was like this in my timetable. It was literally, you could either do drama or PE. I was good at sports. And I knew I had this overwhelming urge to perform, if you like, but it was taking that courage to step out. You know, I knew I can get probably an A or a good mark at PE. I met my teacher from school and she was fantastic. And she knew kind of I had the itch to do that. She got me involved with a little sideshow, and that kind of gave me the bug, if you like. And then after school, it was like, what do you want to do? And I said, you know what? Although I've only done one show, I think I'm going to trust my gut on this and I'm going to do a course in performing arts. After I finished my course, I really enjoyed it. Then I did another, continued my education, did a course in film and theatre studies after that. And I said to myself, like, if I'm dedicating, it, you know, 4 years of my life into this course, I think I'm going to carry on going. Also, my family is very musical. My dad plays guitar, piano. My sister's a singer-songwriter. My sister was a musician herself and was very close to getting publishing deals, worked in music, and she helped me develop my songwriting skills. But it was helping my sister. And I knew I was good at it, but I didn't really have a body of work to kind of like have behind me to prove myself, if you like. So that's why it's been really exciting with the band that I've co-written quite a large amount of our songs.
So the creative process of the band, how do you guys collaborate? Are you all equally 25% inputting into this process? Or is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? Let's dive into the creative process. James, you first.
Well, I mean, I would say that when it comes to the creative process, it varies from song to song. I would say that the foundation, you know, that been laid is generally coming from Sean. He's almost got like a machine-like quality, you know. He's always messaging us and going, guys, I've got another idea. I've got another idea. And he'll start. And sometimes it can be, you know, we're in the middle of rehearsing something else. We're going to record and he'll start just singing something at us. And it's very much at us at that moment in time. Like, all right, okay. And then it sort of, I mean, Sean can go into more detail and then how that develops. But what happens is we get to a place where we're thinking, okay, we like the concept for that. We like the story. That's part of the musical side that I really like that we bring along is the storytelling element of it. And then, you know, we will kind of throw things in. And that's very much more in the arrangement of the song. You know, when it comes to the vocals that we have, the ranges that the four singers possess, you know, we're right, you know, up there and right down there in places. And sometimes it can be a case of we want a line to have that real punch and that real connection. And it just be like, you know, we thought, oh, that's going to be in James's voice. And we say, well, actually, no, it's not got that passion there. It's not in that right register. So it comes from Sean initially, and then we all get hold of it and start to, you know, kind of push and pull it into different directions. But those initial ideas, you know, I would defer to Sean to tell you more about that.
Sean?
Well, that's really kind. Thank you so much, James. Actually, I'll backtrack a bit. I didn't answer half of your question. So,
okay.
So previously to Another State, I was on this band tour on Britain's Got Talent. We were quite successful in the show at the time, in fourth place. And it was mainly doing covers, and in fact we were signed to Simon Cowell's label Psycho and released an amazing album with a 72-piece orchestra. It was epic. It was crazy. Obviously very grateful for my time there. Had some amazing experiences which I felt that I've learnt so much as a person, in myself as an artist. And but after a while I really just had this need to express myself with writing songs. As I mentioned, I'd written a bit with my sister before, but I just kind of wanted to continue it. And only through casting the group and producing, getting everyone together, you know, it was an organic thing. Everyone was like really welcome to listen to my ideas. I said, guys, you know, I've got some ideas. I've got some songs. These are like songs which have been sitting there for 12 years. And they were all so enthusiastic and gave me so much encouragement to let us, you know, have a shot at performing these songs, which meant a lot to me. And as soon as maybe I needed a bit of affirmation, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I knew they were good, but when everyone said, they're really good, and it meant a lot to me. And I was like, okay, great. And then I started getting ideas for songs and just really trusting myself. Like, and I'm just in the moment and just getting these melodies and trusting myself, and I present it to the guys. And again, I don't know if they've just been kind to me sometimes, but they seem to say these are great ideas. And then importantly, it's not just me. I believe in having a network around. So I've met some amazing songwriters who've written with Black Eyed Peas, Olivia Rodrigo, you know, big artist, Sabrina Carpenter. Just found them along the way, maybe through serendipity. I don't know. It's just funny how it's all worked out. I've met some great people. Then we get my ideas and then we develop them. You know, it's not just my ideas. I've got great ideas for melodies and some lyrics. What's even more important, as James was saying, in the room, it's one thing having ideas. It's another thing getting everyone together and saying, because everyone throws in, what about this harmony there? What about I could do this bit? What about we layer this? And that becomes, you know, a massive, you know, integral part of the puzzle.
So you guys are doing something that's very unique to UK bands in the sense that you're crossing over country with pop. Why do you think that no one has done that before?
It's a really good question. That there are actually, in America, there's been, I wouldn't say a great number of bands. There have been, from what I've researched into, maybe 4, 5, 6 bands, but they're male bands, all male bands. There's obviously been loads of groups like the Eagles and such through time. I'm not sure. I think it's the difference between, in a way, like why baseball and American football is big in America, but it's not big here. It's just one of those. It's just a different sound. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it just hasn't really resonated in our culture since the last. When would you say, James? Like, country's come through in the last 2 years? Is it 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite complicated when it comes to the UK, because with it being an island and having not lived here for a while and then coming back, we are sometimes quite skeptical of things from other places. And I think the UK is so sort of steeped in tradition in so many ways, that when we see something that's younger, something that comes from the US, we go, oh, okay, there's no merit in that. I think part of what happens as well is you get this kind of crossover between the folk music scene, which is very sort of established, and you know, I've met and worked with some great folk musicians over the years, and the country music scene, or Americana, as it's sometimes called here. And it's that sort of idea that, well, both are storytelling, both are songs of people. And they should all be focused around things that are completely relatable, things that are in people's lives. And we go, yeah, I can picture myself in that situation. And that's what makes the music connect. So I think it's that sort of thing of not quite knowing where to place it.
Okay.
In the kind of zeitgeist of the country here. And as Sean says, other countries have, you know, had goes at it, and obviously the States, but the UK were sometimes a little bit skeptical of new things.
Yeah, that's quite interesting you say that, because I sometimes, you know, I follow the music charts. I've been, since the youngest, I've been following the UK and USA charts. And I actually find that the UK is, when I follow the charts specifically, I'm not sure beyond that, but when I follow the music charts, the UK is much more diverse. There's much more different styles of music. There's much more newer people and consistency, in the sense that if Kylie has had a top 10, she'll have another top 10, or Katy Perry, or whomever. I've noticed, no offense to any of the American listeners, but it goes through phases where it's like, okay, only pop in the top 100. And then it was like mainly country. And now it's now hip hop and R&B. And I've, you know, people who are getting number ones 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago don't even get into the top 100 anymore, because it's not that genre. So it's interesting you say that, because I, from a perspective as an observer of the charts, I've noticed a different type of thing. But I'm, you know, I'm not, I'm not a, no expert in any way.
No, and neither would I profess to be. And I think that the charts are, you know, perhaps a different animal, a different beast, which maybe I shouldn't say this, but I don't really follow them, so I don't really pay attention to them. But what I am more sort of paying attention to is like what's in the culture, what are people talking about, what's getting out there. And I think that you're right. I think that the US market is very cyclical. It's very like, this is what we're focusing on, almost like, you know, fashion, you know, this is what's in this season. And the UK, I think with the history of music that we've got, I think we do allow artists to establish more. But I think that first kind of getting established thing can be tricky. Okay. And I think that sometimes if the perception is, oh, you're doing an American thing, but you're British, there's a kind of like, why would you do that? But, but you know, they give time, and then, and that's what we hope to do, is that, you know, just by continuing to plug away with good songs and saying like, actually, this is something that people aren't doing, and maybe you want it. Maybe you want it in your lives. So
Not maybe. Let's say they will want it. Sorry, Sean.
Yes, they will. Let's be more positive.
Yes.
It's funny you say that. Sorry, just going back to my previous experience in Jakpak. There was a massive meeting that our label were going to have with Sony America. And we were really excited, thinking, you know, we know how much investment's gone into this project. We know how serious Simon is, et cetera, et cetera. But he came back and said, he met the president. He said he didn't think this would work in America, which we were all really disappointed about. I mean, that's his, obviously, it's fine. It's his subjective opinion. Yes. But I find personally, obviously, we were all really, really disappointed and a bit confused as well why that would matter.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. But like, because that was a few years ago, and then I think hip hop. I mean, everyone's just focusing on hip hop there at the moment. If you look what's coming out, and so it's interesting, and it's they want you to be your own originality of type of music, but then oh no, this is now successful, so we want you to be a carbon copy or a or a imitation of that,
yeah,
because that's, we know we're going to get money out of that. So it's just a weird sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
trends are just funny in general, isn't it? Do you want to be the next new thing? Like, statistically, I was researching recently, and a few of my friends put me, you know, said, oh, have you seen these stats? I was like, what? There's no, apparently, it's the first time in a long time, there's no bands in the chart. Like, there's not even, I'm talking about even guitar bands, especially solo artists. But so that, is that a good thing or a bad thing that we come at a time when we are a band?
It's such a discussion and debate, but this is another point. I want to get your perception first. So Sean, you first. I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of the holding of something. I love the journey of the choice, the experience of the unpacking the booklet, listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, vinyls, cassettes, massive comeback. CDs alone, vinyls alone last year, 5.9 million sales in the UK, biggest since 1990. In the UK, I was also reading recently that you guys have a basket of goods or products that they gauge exchanges on for tax purposes. And vinyls have always been in that basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs, those are now back in the basket. In Asia or Thailand or somewhere, there were a vinyl factory just reopened after 50 years of being closed. So all these physical things are on the upgrowth. But then we've also got these streaming platforms. So Sean, first, what are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
That's so interesting. I actually wasn't aware of what you just said.
Yeah.
And I personally, I was the guy every week who would go to HMV. I would love buying an album or a single, both, and having the physical thing. I it may be something for myself. I collect things. I'm a collector of certain things, trainers or other things I collect, random things. So I personally like to have an object. But I can understand how, obviously, it's also more environmentally friendly not to do that. I think it's just personal. It's personal preference. I get it, it makes sense, but personally, I don't feel like it's mine, and I feel I don't have as much as a connection as I did when I was growing up. Personally,
James, anything to add?
I'd known about the vinyl resurgence that had been going on for a wee time, but I'm sort of surprised by CDs coming back.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sean touched on something there, I think, when it came to the environmental issue. I think that the music industry, you know, has to be careful, because if you look at something like fast fashion, you know, that's kind of producing something to purely replace it very soon. But the difference there being that the physical media that you talk about, that's tied to an experience, like you were describing, Barrett. You know, you go and you get it and that unpacking. And I don't know about you, but I used to read the booklet before playing the music. Yeah, I'd sort of go through all that and see if there was any artwork. I always remember Prodigy, Music for the Jilted Generation, and there was this artwork in the middle of the booklet. And there was a guy flipping the bird, you know, to people over on the other side of the river. And I thought, and I was young, I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. What I think it does is it sort of brings back that experience and music should be an experience, but we're giving people the choice now to say, well, how are you going to experience it? Personally, I always think that the sound is better on physical media. But, you know, you've got to be a bit of an audiophile to kind of really appreciate that sometimes. The convenience of being able to stream things in your car, the convenience of not having to, oh my God, I've lost that CD or I've broken it. Of course, like, you know, there's that side. And I think what it does is it makes people make a very conscious choice that I want to own that record, you know? And so if you can get into somebody's life that way as an artist, that they say, you know, I must own this and I want to have it and I want the artwork and I want to see the photographs on the cover and I want all this, then, you know, I think that's a great achievement. But we're not just sort of dismissing things from the past and saying progress is king, that we're sort of saying, well, actually, you can do this and you can have this.
Yes.
And God, you know, winding a cassette back with a pencil.
Oh, I hate that.
It still happened, you know? Yeah. And it would get twisted. And
yes.
You're like, oh my God, I remember that. I agonized.
That's why when CDs came out, I was like, okay, yes, the cassette thing was driving me mad.
Okay, but so, when are mini discs coming back? That's what I wanted to know. When are mini discs going to come back?
Yeah, but I missed the special experience. I think there was something special about me going to the shop. I would look forward to it, like how I would look forward to go to Blockbuster Video. I would spend sometimes an evening there, not even buy a video. I just enjoyed doing it. But yeah, it is. Yeah, it's nice that it's coming back, and I hope it becomes more popular.
Well, what's interesting is the research is showing that it's actually the younger, the teenagers, and the late teens and early 20s are actually diving into it. And it's not like the older nostalgic people. It's all that the younger kids are doing it because they apparently one of the reasons is they're sick of having everything on their phone and they want to have more of experiential type things instead of just stuff on the cloud, so to speak.
It's a thing, isn't it, about youth and whatever generation comes through, is that you're kind of given this is how things are and this is how we do it. And there's always a core in young people that's looking for how do we revolt against that, you know. So I kind of love that idea that people who never experienced this now think it's cool to do what their parents did, to listen to it that way. And you know, I sometimes teach part time as well, and I work with young people, and you see that it's that kind of like railing against it. The same way that with social media, everything became so staged for so long that now people are sort of accepting that, well, we can't get rid of it, but what we want to do with it is be more realistic. Yeah. You know, we want to be not as staged and to counteract that kind of like, you know, Instagram versus reality thing. So
yeah.
I think that's great. I think that's brilliant.
My friend's a big Marillion. Do you like Marillion?
Yes.
Big Marillion fan. And it's interesting how they make the physical sale a big part of loads of people sign up to the mailing list or whatever.
Yeah.
And every time they do a release, my mate looks forward to getting this personalized, I think it's a box, and they send something. And it's quite clever how they've used that as a way to encapsulate their audience, which I find quite interesting.
Discussions. But what's coming up next for you guys?
Yeah, so we're a new act. We've been out a few months now, and we've got quite a large vault or a large bank of songs to release. So we're steadily pushing forward and making sure our music comes out as regular as possible. I think what's important these days with social media is that if you're a new artist, especially, you keep on releasing music, get yourself out there. And eventually we have high hopes for the future. You know, we've already had some great offers to do some nice tours and stuff, but we want to take it easy, and because we believe in just planting ourselves a little bit, and hopefully in time we'll get the audience behind us and we can do stuff, you know, like a really like an epic level, we hope.
And not hoping, it'll happen.
Thank you so much. I mean, we think hopefully our music is quite, it's got a worldwide feel to it. We really feel that we've just scratched the surface of what we can achieve.
Looking forward to all the next steps and all the success in exclamation marks that are coming through. I love this game. James first. Sean, you're going to have a moment to think. Without any reasoning. And I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 20 minutes, I know your answers will be different every time because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 songs, what would those songs be and by whom? James, you first.
Well, let's say, because it was in the top of my mind earlier on, Lion Eyes by the Eagles. I'm on a bit of a Teddy Swims kick at the moment, so I'm going to go for The Door. Let's go maybe obscure. Manic Street Preachers, Why So Sad. Really like that one growing up. Can't think of the name of the song, so I'm going to say anything by Coheed and Cambria, because when I was a kid, I was a bit of a gothic emo type. So I'm going to pop that in there. Oh, last one. I'm going to say, can I take an album because it's all one track?
Yeah.
Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
Lovely. Sean, your 5.
Wow. What a hard question. I've got really eclectic taste.
You've got to say think.
Yes. Philadelphia Freedom, Elton John. It just makes me happy when I listen to it. And I think it's one of the ones where it's not as mainstream as the other ones he's had. And I just love it. I think it's understated. When I was growing up, I used to be into kind of soft rock, I would say, or Pearl Jam and Nirvana and stuff like that. So I'll say Pearl Jam Black. Is a song I used to really like. I also, I love swing music. Frank Sinatra, Night and Day was a big song for me growing up. God, this is a really hard question.
Even if it's just artists. Even if it's just artists.
Glen Campbell, big country song. Glen Campbell, The Wichita Lineman. What a lovely song. Just unusual lyrics. Just it really takes you in every time I listen to it. And finally, what am I going to say? Wow. I'm not going to lie. I love Michael Jackson. Off the Wall, Michael Jackson.
Lovely. Nice mix. Yeah. I need to add some of those to mine, so thank you. So, James, you first. As a quick final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
So, hi. No. speaking on behalf of the group, you know, just thank you for anybody who's been listening to the music right now. We receive a lot of great feedback via social media. The support really matters to us. And just keep your eyes and ears open, because we have got so many, I think, great songs lined up, and I'm sure you're going to agree. And we're just, like Sean said, we're just going to keep releasing them, putting them out there, doing it old school. So and maybe like what you said, maybe we should look into, if we're going to be old school, maybe we'll look into some physical media at some point as well, who knows. But it's exciting for us, and I just really hope that excitement translates across in the music to everybody else who's hearing it for the first time.
Sean, would you like to add anything?
What's exciting is we've already recorded, probably at least an album and a half's worth of material, and there's so much more that we're capable of. So we're just really excited about starting our journey now, being the first group doing this, and we just we can't wait to get out there and hopefully to meet everyone along the way and do something hopefully very special with our careers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.